Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shireen.
Hi, Anna. Wow, what an episode we have for y'all today. We're joined by the hilarious Canadian comedian. We talk a lot about Canada, Dave Murhege. It's a really lovely time. We talk about how he got into comedy, how he feels about Canada versus New York versus LA. It's a twist. Every turn is a twist. But his family and his supportive parents and how great they are. And also Rami.
Yeah.
How he got that role. It's a really great story involving a lovely Chinese woman. So don't go anywhere.
Who are we? Where did we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Okay, this is Ethnically Ambiguous. Hi, everyone, I'm Shireen.
Great. I think you're nervous to say the show title. This is, oh no, what have we done?
Yeah.
Welcome to Ethnically Ambiguous. This is Anna.
I already said my name, but welcome. I just came back from Yosemite, so this is like the first real thing I have to do, which is a bummer because I don't want to be here, but not here physically. I mean, you know what I mean, LA.
Okay.
don't want to be here.
Oh, okay.
But no, Yosemite was fun. Climb some rocks. What about you? How have you been?
I've been great. We'll get into how I've been in probably 40 episodes from now because a lot has happened in my life, but I'm not ready to talk about it on this show.
Yeah, it'll be worth the wait. Trust me.
It'll be worth the wait, baby. In 2 years, when you hear about this news, oh my God, you'll be like, oh my God, woo!
Yeah,
but until then, don't you dare ask about it.
Don't you ask her any questions. But if you heard that little chuckle in the background, that's our guest today.
Chuckle.
He's a comedian. He's an actor. He's fucking hilarious. He's also Canadian, which is better than us.
Wow, wow, wee, wow.
Dave Murhege.
I love the word better as Canadian.
I mean, it's kind of true. I have family in Canada, and they're nicer than us, you know, so I believe it.
You know, I'll tell you this. I find New Yorkers a little bit nicer than Toronto. Sometimes.
Oh. Yeah. Oh, Toronto.
Yeah.
I have family in Mississauga, and I've been to Toronto, and I also have family in Vancouver. But yeah, the people I know that live in Toronto are, it's a very city-like life, like kind of New York-y, right?
When you're dealing with strangers, I'd rather talk to a New York stranger.
Mm-hmm. Really?
Like that.
Okay. Yeah, this is fascinating.
They're just more outgoing and they want to talk to you.
Oh, interesting. Huh. I tried to catch up on some of your online clips and stuff, but there was one that you're talking about how you're from Windsor and how it's even worse than Toronto or something, where you said like they took out the Tim Hortons, which is like pretty, like they even did that kind of thing. But can you tell us about that, like growing up in Windsor?
Windsor's a border town, so I grew up maybe like 15 minutes from the tunnel to get to Detroit. So it's like an Americanized city, I feel, Windsor itself. So like I remember moving to Toronto and I felt like less Canadian, whatever that means. But I was watching only American TV. So it was like, that's the interesting part about Windsor, which I like about it.
I've never heard of Windsor, so I really can't comment. But I'm very intrigued by the fact that you've said that it's Canadian. I mean, like you enjoy talking to New Yorkers more. Are people mean in Toronto? I've only been once and I don't recall.
It's not mean. I remember in New York, I was trying to get a drink, like a Snapple. And then this guy started talking about vitamin water and how 50 Cent owned it. And it was like 30 minutes later, I'm talking to this person. I feel like in Toronto, I don't get into those conversations.
Interesting.
This guy could have been nuts. So.
Yeah. Well, that's Toronto for you, I suppose. You will know it better than both of us, even though, yeah, we've been tourists, not residents. But wait, also, do you know that your name is on howtopronounce.com? Because I wanted to make sure I knew how to pronounce it. And so one of the first things that pops up is your last name on howtopronounce.com, and it spells it phonetically or whatever. And then there's a part that says meetings for Merhej. And literally the only sentence is, it is the surname of Dave Merhej, a comedian who has gained immense recognition for the show Rami. That's the meaning of Merhej in this dictionary thingy. So
that's crazy.
I thought that was very funny. I thought you have to know.
That's fun.
Yeah, that's the definition of your last name. The fact that you are a comedian that has gained recognition for the show Rami.
I tell Rami. Yeah. Like, thank you.
Yeah. Wait, so tell us, why and when did you move to Toronto initially?
2005 or 2006. I had met this headliner from Toronto. He came into Windsor. He did the Yuck Yucks. And I was telling him I might want to move to New York or L.A., but I didn't know anything about a green card or citizenship. He's like, why don't you go to Toronto first? And I was like, I don't know. And then I was going to visit a friend anyways. And then he kind of put me in contact with like certain things to do in the city. I went there. I enjoyed myself. And then I was like, I'm gonna move there.
Nice.
Were you born in Windsor or
yep.
did your family move there?
They moved from Lebanon. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. So your parents moved from Lebanon, ended up in Windsor. Why did they leave Lebanon?
They met in Windsor. Oh. My dad left, I think, in his late 20s. Mm-hmm. His sister had come to Windsor, and then everybody followed. And my mom had come with her family. And then my dad met my mom through his sister. Mm-hmm. And then they linked there. Yeah.
Oh, that's cute. I mean,
he ghosted her.
Oh, never mind.
Oh.
Yeah. His sister was like, you can't do that. You got to go out with her. And then they got married.
Wow.
Yeah.
That sounds like a scam, but I'm kidding. No. Wow, that's interesting. I feel like it's nice where you meet people through other people. I feel like my parents immigrated here together. Anna's also met when they immigrated both to Utah, right, Anna?
Yeah.
And I think, like, for whatever reason, I'm more fascinated by you and Anna's story, because I'm just like, that's so boring. My parents already knew each other. Like, they were coming to America together, whatever. But I think we've gotten ahead of ourselves, because I want to know, when did you know you were interested in comedy?
I think when I was, like, super young, I just wanted to be an entertainer. Hmm. I didn't really think about stand-up. Yeah. I'd watch, like, The Tonight Show, MTV Awards, Soul Train, and I was just wanted to entertain. Mm-hmm. And then I was with my sister and my cousin. We'd hang out, and I would make tapes. I'd get them to do like impressions. I'd do a fake talk show, fake sitcom. And then from there, I think my uncle showed me stand-up videos of Richard Pryor, Andrew Dice Clay, Eddie Murphy. Wow. And then I started to get it to stand up there.
Your Arab uncle was like, you got to check out the Dice Man?
No, my white my uncle. My aunt married a Canadian.
Oh, okay. That makes more sense.
I knew that was suspicious. Yeah, that makes way more sense. That makes way more sense. What did your parents think about you wanting to pursue comedy? Like, wait, before you actually, like, moved?
Oh, they're dope about it. That's where I feel blessed and lucky. They were very supportive from the jump.
That's awesome.
Yeah. They've been to almost every show that I do in Windsor. They're there. The whole family's there.
That's so nice.
Yeah. I run bits. It's like I'll call my mom. I'm like, yo, I'm going to talk this about you. She's like, yeah, it's all good.
I like that. There was one bit about your mom and dad that I really liked that I know Anna will also like. It's about how your dad keeps all his emotions bottled up. And just, like, doesn't handle it, like, doesn't deal with anything. And then in comparison to your mom, who cries at everything, she's like, just like our parents, just like, please eat something. And you're like, I'm good. And then she's just like, how can you betray me? It's like, becomes a whole waterwork situation. That is so relatable. And I love that your parents are chill with that kind of little, like, poking, because that's cool, in my opinion.
I just shot a special in Canada in July, and I had it's going to be where interviews with my family. So it'll cut to them speaking on like basically why they're cool with it.
Mm-hmm.
My dad just likes, you know, being talked about, I guess. So he's cool with
it. He likes the attention.
Yeah. I know that life.
Yeah.
God, it's so relatable. Just like I feel like they'd, the moms are like sensitive in a way of like they're hurt easily, but like they're not necessarily like talking about why they're hurt. It's just like an immediate hurt and you're like, what?
Yeah.
And then dads, so like dads have never had an emotion in their life. And you're like, well, that's how you implode.
Yeah.
But they're not worried. They're not worried at all though.
Yeah, I could count, like, I've heard my dad cry once when his mom died and he was on the phone. And that scared me because I had never heard that noise before.
Yeah.
And then I saw him cry. Me and my sister both saw him cry for the very first time on her wedding day. And it was, she was so, like, we didn't know what to do. We were honestly kind of scared. We're just like, what's happening? Like,
yeah.
It is so bizarre to have, I don't know, to repress emotions like that.
My grandpa died and we were at the funeral. And me and my little brother, like, if we see our dad cry, we're going to break down. So we're all sitting, my other brother, my sister, and my sister looks and she goes, is dad telling jokes? Like, you know, when people come to pay respect and he's bombing, like he's telling a joke, his face is red. So he's bombing at a funeral.
Wow. That's how he copes, you know,
yeah.
Instead of crying, he's like, let me humiliate myself.
That's like where actually emotions, I feel like, do come out. Like, because there is somewhat like, I've noticed this, like Middle Eastern men are very like, they're very toxic in their own masculinity. But at the same time, they're also like very like touchy feely with their boys. Like they'll hold hands.
Oh, yeah.
They'll kiss each other on the cheek. They'll like have their arm around each other like the whole time. And then, you know. It's just like a really funny thing to me because I'm like, it's like a really hilariously homoerotic and like wonderful, but like to them, it's just like the culture and they don't think about it. And I'm like, God, if only you guys could just like be a little more chill in your politics in that regard, because like, it's like, you're cool. Everyone's cool.
Yeah.
You know, there's nothing wrong with femininity, you know, like it's fine to experience that. You just don't even realize like you guys have very feminine actions and how you like relate and hang out with your boys, but they
even
don't
how
see
they
it.
Touch each other.
Yeah,
like,
that's what I'm saying.
There are so many photos of my dad back in college or whatever. And he's so it's like so intimate. They're like in their underwear, just hanging out and like hug. Like, it's just like for the longest time, for a while when I was a teenager, I saw those photos and I was convinced that my dad was gay. I was convinced because I was like, I've never seen him this happy. I've never seen him like this. There was one guy in particular he was always with. And I made this whole story up about how my dad had to be gay because look at him, how happy he was and how touchy he was and like all these emotions. I mean, it's just that's just how men are. It's sometimes in the Middle East. I mean, some of them are gay. But in my circumstance, I was making up a thing to try to make sense of emotion on my dad's face in a photo.
It happens. I will say, though, I did also see my dad cry at his brother's funeral. And a part of me was like, because he was covering his face because it was outside and it was snowing. And I was like, for a second, like, is he actually crying or is he just making the noise of crying? I wasn't sure. Even though, like, there was like a moment where I was like, no, he's got to be crying, right? Like, he is crying. But for one second, I was actually suspicious of him. I was like, but are you crying? But he was. He was crying. I did confirm he was. I asked. I was like, were you crying? And he's like, what? Yes. I'm like, at my brother's grave. Like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, okay, cool. I just wasn't sure because you're like kind of weird. Like,
yeah,
you're a strict conservative Persian dad. What am I supposed to know? You know?
He's just thinking like, this is what people should do. I should make crying sounds.
He's like looking around like, okay, everyone else seems emotional.
Yeah. I mean, I will say in comparison, I don't know, I want to know how you turned out, Dave, but I cry a lot.
Oh, I cry all day.
Like, being told, like, you're being sensitive and, like, needing to bottle yourself up as a child or, like, a teenager or whatever, it just resulted in me being a huge crybaby. What, can you relate to that?
Yeah, I cry. You know, I've cried over my time. The older I get, the more I cry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cry for us, Dave. Cry for us.
Yeah. I'll cry when I need to, or not. I'll just cry randomly.
Yeah, which is good. I, you know what? I mean, we're called so emotional as kids because we can't like process any of our emotion because we were never taught to. And then like, it's like, yeah, but that's fine. Let us cry a little.
I mean, like for certain things, it'll be harder for me to cry, which I'm working on, like in therapy, like certain issues I'm less vulnerable about, but other things I could be more vulnerable. Do you know what I mean? If that makes sense?
Yeah, that does. I've had that as well.
I mean, the fact that you even have the awareness and even are in therapy, I think is great because none of my Arab cousins or Arab friends even consider, not from, you know, I mean, like the people like from the homeland, they would never consider therapy, let alone like talking about their emotions and crying.
Like I could cry at a Frank Ocean song, but if somebody, you know, like maybe if somebody died, then I know I won't, it won't be easy to cry.
Right.
Yeah,
I understand that for sure. We compartmentalize different things and we don't realize how much we like ignore one versus the other, and like because it's painful or because of XYZ. So that makes sense to me.
Okay. So your parents come, they meet in Windsor. And so how many siblings do you have?
I'm the oldest, and it's Mary, Joe, and John. So three.
Oh, I'm Mary, assuming y'all are Christian.
Yeah.
We are Catholic. Yeah, we are Catholic.
Oh, you're Catholic. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Is that common in Lebanon, Catholicism?
Yeah. I'm not the right. I don't want to say anything at the wrong and the facts wrong.
I mean, I think it is. If you look at like entertainment in the Middle East, a lot of the singers and a lot of the entertainers are Lebanese because I hate to be stereotypical, but a lot of the times the Muslim entertainers have like, they have to be put in a box, and that's unfortunate. But like the more like Christian kind of nature of Lebanon, because I think Lebanon is similar to Syria. There's a very big Christian population in Syria. And I think Lebanon's the same way. So that makes sense to me.
But nobody like gets that I'm that, because they'll be like, do you eat pork? I go, yeah.
Right.
And then I clue in, that I was Muslim.
Well, yeah, Christian makes sense, but Catholicism I'm more fascinated by because I didn't know Catholicism.
That's a good point.
Was like,
no, sorry,
I guess.
We went to a Catholic Roman school, elementary school.
Okay.
I remember it from the calendar, let's say at the top, Catholic Rome, like in caps.
Interesting.
Catholic, you're Catholic, bitch. Get in here. I went to a Catholic private school for a while as well because my parents would be like, just whatever, do what they say. Just get a goddamn good education and stop complaining. And I'd be like, we're not like Catholic or Christian, though. My mom would be like, at this point, just go to fucking school and stop being annoying. And I'd be like, okay, fine. My parents just wanted to put us in a private school. They were like, this one's nice. Go there.
Yeah.
Like, okay. Now I'm reading the Bible in school, though. You know that, right? We're Muslim. And they'd be like, just whatever.
I want to say, though, I didn't go to a private school.
Okay. On the record. You did not go to a private school.
To a private school. It would have been dope, I feel.
I don't know.
I went to a private school for a couple of years in a mosque because my parents were really like, you can't forget where you come from. And the uniforms were really ugly, so I don't recommend. But
that would have made more sense than what my parents were doing, which were like, look, it's affordable, it's private, go there, even though you're literally reading the Bible. And I'm like, okay, I'll just pretend I'm Christian, I guess.
It's like the opposite of what my parents did. They're like, education first, your cult, you lose your culture, whatever, it doesn't matter. You can become Christian. And mine were like, this is a shitty school, but it's in a mosque, so deal with it.
Look, we had fire, you know, uniforms. We were called the Comets.
Oh, that's cute.
Yeah.
What was the demographics like in Windsor or like at your school as far as like other Lebanese families or Arab families?
There's a lot of Lebanese people in Windsor in general. It's multicultural. Greeks, Polish, Italian, big Italian and Lebanese community.
Oh.
Our mayor was Lebanese at one point.
Wait, that's cool. That's so cool. Yeah.
Eddie Francis.
Is that what led your parents there?
No, I know my dad's sister, she moved first, like I said. And I think I got to ask my mom. She came when she was young. Again, okay. Like I said.
Yeah. It's interesting, like, where immigrants will gather. Like, a big draw of my dad going to Anaheim first, out of all these other places he had went to, was the really big Arab community in Anaheim. That's how it starts, right? Like, there's a little bit of a community, and then everyone starts going because of that community. And then before you know it, it's just like, wow, here we are. All like, of the family.
When I grew up, there was Lebanese people, but as I got older, there was way more. Mm-hmm. Now there's just like,
exactly. Okay, fascinating. Let's take our first commercial break. How about that? Go grab a water. We'll be right back.
And we're back with Dave Mahesh. Oh my God. Wow. It's funny, we've always wanted to have you on. And then I was like, wait, should I just email him? It literally was. I was like, wait, I know Dave. He used to do my shows all the time. I should just email him. And then you responded, and I was like, God, that was easy. Why have we been doing this?
Yeah,
time?
Why wouldn't
I don't know. You know what? Someone goes,
You're too big for us. You're on howtopronounce.com.
Yeah, I was like, he's on howtopronounce.com.
But you know me.
Yeah. I know, well, but it's weird. You know when someone gets on TV and then all of a sudden you're like, wow. And then you like forget. You're just like, oh, wait, actually, Dave's really cool. I should just email him.
Yeah, I was at the Palace.
So before you hopped on the Zoom, I had realized, so at the Palace, Anna was producing and booking, and there were days where I would come and take photos
of the
people performing, and I would send them to the people for free, because I was just like, you should have these photos, like, tag me if you want, whatever. I was, like, so unjaded back then. But I looked up your name in my email because I was like, was Dave one of these people? And you were! In June of 2015, I sent you photos, and you said thank you. So,
okay, I thought it was mean or something.
No.
She sent you photos. You were like,
it's all full circle.
We were like, oh well.
Comedy Palace was a great show. It was a great show.
That was a fun venue. If you would have said,
I mean, what if that was all what this was about? Like 6 years later, I was like, you owe me money for these
times.
After all these years, we're like, hey, Dave. So anyway, we brought you on because you have an outstanding bill. It was Comedy Palace was a great time. And to give some context, this was a weekly comedy show I produced in the attic of a Chinese restaurant in L.A.
And that Chinese restaurant is gone. And it broke my heart.
They closed it down. I think the building's still there.
The building is there, but I don't know what it is now.
I don't think it's anything. I don't know if they ever resold it. But you know what? Rest in peace, you dusty little addict.
Don't ever put anything else in that lot. Well, it's probably going to become like a fucking
It'll be like a Starbucks. Loft. It'll be like a giant loft building that's like, you know, overpriced. Yeah. But you know what? LA, baby, gotta love that gentrification. So, Dave, where are you based now?
Los Angeles.
Oh, you're in LA.
I moved in June. Sorry.
Okay. Oh, so you're a recent LA. Welcome.
No, I was here 2016 and I hated it. And then I moved to New York for 2 years. And then I came back in June.
What's the reasons for all these switchings? Is it like how you're feeling? Like, oh, I hate this place now. Time to get out of here. And then you're like,
I always wanted to come to LA. And then I got here. And then it was more like a personal, like I didn't get the adjustment. Like I go back to Canada, headline clubs, and I just wasn't finding my footing. Mm-hmm. And I wasn't mature enough to understand, to like wait it out or, you know. So then I went to New York on like, I just want to live in a city that I like. And then I went there and then came back last June.
So, classic question, which do you prefer, New York or LA?
New York always, just fun-wise, right? And just like it's more, because I lived in Toronto for 14 years, so I can walk there, the subways, diners, has that vibe, which I'll always enjoy.
I appreciate that New York lifestyle because of that, but it almost feels like if I would have, like when I'm visiting, it's fun, but the idea of living there scares the goddamn hell out of me.
I wish I would have lived there before. Like, I've stayed there for a couple months, but that doesn't count. I really fucking love New York. I would move there in a heartbeat if my parents didn't guilt me into staying 2 hours away from them. But that's a different story, a different time. So you're doing comedy, trying to find your footing, as you said. When did like acting enter the picture for you? Was it just something that came about naturally, or was it something you were interested in before as well?
Oh, I always wanted to act. So I was going to use stand up to get into acting. Ooh. It was always my goal.
Okay. Interesting. Did you ever do any improv?
Yeah. In Toronto. It was cool.
Yeah. I mean, I'm curious because everyone's always like, if you're going to do acting now, you got to do improv first or some shit like that.
I got into it because the guy thought I was improvising my stand-up. Oh. But I was actually doing my act.
Oh, really?
So then he invited me to some classes and then his improv troupe. And he was telling people, he's like, yeah, this guy, I saw him and he just improvises everything. So I told him the side, I go, nah, it was some of it. I was like, yeah, that's my material. And he goes, really?
Like, shut up. I was like, okay. He was like so impressed with you before. He was like very impressed with this year like, before. Oh. And it's like, it was scripted?
That's interesting.
I once did a college gig and the guy, the booker, emailed the guy who booked us, the other comic, and he goes, this comic just fucking sucks. Like, he just kind of shit on it. And he goes, and the worst part about it is that he went up and he just riffed his whole act. And it was my set word for word for word. That's how bad I did.
Wow.
That he thought I made.
He thought you just got out and been like, you know what? Who cares?
It wow. could either be a good thing or a bad thing. It was either like, wow, he was okay, but it was all improv. He wasn't prepared. Or it could be the other thing where it's like, wow, all improv. So impressive.
I don't get it. What is it about your stand-up that people are like, this guy's riffing? I don't remember your stand-up being like that.
He's like cracking up. We lost Dave.
Sorry.
No, that's fine. I'm just fascinated by that they're like, this guy, all he does is riff. And it's like, no, these are, I wrote this.
It's so funny. When he shit on me, that promoter, I was like, this is the best. This is the best email.
That's wild. That's really funny. How long have you been doing stand-up now?
17 years. I started 17 years. 24, okay. 24 years old, kind of in college, not really full on, until I moved to Toronto, which is 25 years old, I think.
Okay. Wow. And that's when you fully got into it?
Fully got into it, yeah.
Wow. What a life. 17 years of stand-up. You're basically like, yeah. You're like an elder.
You're tenured.
Yeah, you're ten. You got your tenure now. They can't get rid of you.
I am in age and in stand-up.
No. You're tenured. They can't fire you technically now.
That's what I mean. Like, it's too late. You're on TV. You have a special. Yeah, you're fine. Yeah. Here you are.
That's cool. And your parents were always supportive. That's like amazing.
Yeah, I'm very lucky.
I mean, look. As Middle Eastern kids, you really never know where the shoe will fall. Because we've had other people on who've been like, yeah, my parents are very supportive. And then other people who are like, my parents still send me like applications to grad school, even though I'm like a successful comedian.
I know some friends that tell me what they're going through. And I'm like, no, my mom will listen to me talk about sex stories with like a drink in the back.
Yeah.
And she's cool with it.
That's really sick. You have sick parents.
Yeah. Yeah, they're pretty. But if I talk about God or Jesus, my mom's like, yo, chill.
That's the red chill line. Yeah,
she's like, yo, chill out, bro.
That's
anything
funny.
But Jesus.
Yeah, she's like, you better run that back.
So she's pretty religious. Are your parents both pretty religious or just your mom?
She and my sister are super religious.
That's interesting. I have the same thing where my brother and my mom are religious. And my dad's like, I don't care.
He'll go to church, but he's not like, he's not super, super religious.
Yeah. He's not worried if you're talking, making a joke about God.
No, that guy, yeah, that guy's a savage sometimes. He's been kicked out of church.
Oh, has he? That's fun.
Yeah, arguing with the
police. For bombing at your a funeral, is that why?
Yeah.
Wait, what was he arguing with the priest about?
His mom passed away, and they would have like a memorial prayer or ceremony every year. And they had switched the dates, and he didn't like that. So they got into
Oh, that's good. He's got to defend his mother's honor.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah. He loves his mom.
Really I like good. That. My dad always gets in arguments everywhere we go to, just because he's he has no like boundaries in regards to what you should or shouldn't say. And so he'll just be like, what the hell? And
you're like, yeah. Well, do you have the problem? Like, so my dad, he doesn't realize how his tone sounds. Like he'll think he's being very nice and the waiter will be like, what did I do wrong? You know what I mean? Yeah. And that happens with handyman, like gardeners, anything, any kind of person that he's talking to. A lot of the times they go to my mom and they're like, I'm not working for you anymore. Or like, why is this person yelling at me? And it's just my dad trying to be like, good job or some shit. I don't fucking know. Or like asking a question. And it always happens. I don't know why. Me and my sisters tried to be like, Baba, you said that really like aggressively. And he was like, I'm very happy right now. They know that I'm very nice. And then it's not the case.
They know.
At all.
I've heard my dad say, they know I'm nice. And it's like, do you hear how abrasive you sound when you say the word nice? You're also screaming. It's just how they are, you know? But the thing is, when you're in like the Middle East, you know, Lebanon, Iran, like that's how people talk. There's kind of an aggression to how you speak. And like, I'll be like, you know, around my family and everyone will be like scream talking. And I'm like not used to it unless I'm like, you know, it takes me a while when I go to Iran, when I'm like in a living room and I'm surrounded by family to not be like, guys, chill out. Everyone is screaming.
Yeah.
And then after a while, once I settle in, I'm screaming as well, you know, but like, it's like, it's so intense at first. But then to them, they're like, what? We're having a great time. Yeah. And you're like, yeah, you're screaming.
I notice it when my family is at restaurants here because I'm just like, we're like just like having a good time talking the way we talk and people think we're like arguing or something. And I noticed it especially after my sister married a white guy and like his family in comparison or whatever, or like we'd be out to dinner with our family plus him. And I could just tell that he was just like, are they okay? Like what happened here? But
I mean, they're not okay, but you know, it is what it is. They're not mad, but they're definitely not okay.
No, far from okay.
I kind of like it. And there's that whole thing with like the bill, like they have to like murder each other to pay the bill. Yeah. And that's always like a physical altercation that you're like, everything's fine. They're just fighting over the honor of paying the bill. And there's like one man's choking out another man and you're like, it's cool. It's just so hectic. And you're like, that's how
we do it. There's like the bathroom trick or like the going, you know what I mean? There's always those little things that like your uncle will get up being like, I gotta go pee or something. And then he pays the check.
Well, that's
my dad's like, no.
Yeah. Last week, rapper Faye, said was like, well, that's amateur. You have to call ahead with the credit card already on file.
Yeah, that's what my mom does.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah, my mom did that. My friends were trying to pay. I bring them to do shows in Windsor from Toronto. Mm-hmm. So they were like, we got her this time. They go to the counter. They're like, we want to pay. And they're like, she already called like 2 hours ago. I was like, it's done. Bro.
That's hilarious.
It's amazing. They're already thinking ahead. They're like, well, how do I treat these people well?
It's like aggressive generosity. Like, it's not just like generous. It is out of the goodness of your heart, but it's also like, I must do this or it will enrage me.
My mom, like if you make a joke about my brother's sister, she'd be like, Habibi, why are you talking mean to them? They're your family. Mm-hmm. I go, it's a joke. She goes, no, we should not treat each other like this. So it's like so delicate, the care and love. It's very, very beautiful. Actually, probably stressful. And anxiety for her, but it is kind of so beautiful that you can care that much.
Yeah.
It's they scary. Feel hard. They feel hard and yet don't express an emotion.
No. Well, there was also a bit that you did. Sorry that I'm just like quoting you, but I just related to it so much because it was along the same line of like your dad being not expressing his emotions. And he expressed it one time just being like, I care for you. I fixed your teeth. And that was how he showed his love, which I relate to. It's when my dad's like, I helped you go to school. Like, can't you tell I love you? It's just like all these financial things he's done. And I'm like, yeah, sure. Yeah, okay. But he does love me. I just, different way of showing it.
he had to fix them. I had like buck teeth. I had a major overbite. My front teeth were spread out. I had warts on my eyes. It's like when I was 14, glasses. So I do thank him so much because he fixed my teeth.
Okay. Well, what about the warts?
He paid for it. The warts, we burned them off.
Okay.
So they're gone.
Wow.
I remember my dad did that too. Not for me, but to himself. And he my dad's very vain in that regard. He's very into his looks. But yeah, he immediately goes anything on my face, I'll burn it off. I go straight to the dermatologist. He doesn't need it. He'll show up and be like, yeah, do that freezy thing where you burn off the marks on your face. And I'm like, do you feel pain? Like, what is with you? He's like, no, I can't have anything on this beautiful face. And you're like, okay. And then he's literally, do you need it? And I'm like, don't fucking come near me. I don't want to do it. I don't need anything going on. I'm fine.
The offer's nice though. It is
nice. Yeah.
You never know if you're going to get a wart or a milia around your eyes, all those little dots that I'm getting now that I've been holding.
Yeah, I have some too. Yeah. But it is interesting how open they are to aesthetical changes. It's not like the insurance company where they're like, that is a choice to change that aesthetic about yourself, so I will not pay for it. If you go Dad, my teeth are funky. He's like, we got to fix them. We got to fix them. There's no way. I can't have weird teeth. I can't have a weird toothed child.
No. My dad has never fixed his teeth, but my mom just recently did Invisalign. But I was thinking, she fixed all her children's teeth, not even thinking, what about me? My child cannot have a tooth out of place.
My dad has had veneers since I was born, huge ones. And he told me he's going to get them redone recently because he's like, I've had these for a long time. We need new teeth. It's time. We're going to get upgrades. Whoa. I'm like, if your teeth get bigger than what they are right now, which are so obviously veneers, you're going to look insane. And he was like, and he literally goes, it's my choice. And I'm like, no one is being debating.
My body, my choice.
Yes, that was he was offended. He's like, I make the choice what I do with my body. I was like, no, I'm just saying don't get them even bigger, which I have a feeling you're going to do. I can just sense from knowing you for all my life that you want larger teeth. You have that energy. But yeah, he paid for
big tooth energy.
He paid for my teeth to get braces for years. My dad, yeah. Aesthetically, they have no problem being like, let's fix it up, honey.
Maybe a lot of families are like this and we're just thinking about our own, but they really put not just aesthetically, but your health and everything. That's the only thing that they think of or matters to them. And that's a huge part of love. You know, I don't know. I remember I was really self-conscious in high school about so many things on my face. We have genetic under eye bags, and my mom I was so sad about it. She took me to a dermatologist to explain what I could do to help me or whatever. And it was just the most, thinking back on it, it was out of the way, 40 minutes away in the middle of nowhere, because we lived in the suburbs, we had to go to the city. But I keep thinking about these moments where I was just you didn't have to do that. It was just because one, maybe to shut me up, but two, because you loved me.
Yeah. I remember my dad literally being like, if you want a nose job, let me know. And I was like, do I need one? He's like, no, it's just if you ever decide you want one, just let me know. I was like, you want me to shoot you a text? You want me to shoot a quick text? I know. I have so many cousins who are always like, you're so lucky you don't need a nose job. And I'm like, why is that your thought when you look at me? I'm so blessed to have a nose that doesn't need to be broken again and re-put back together. I'm just so lucky.
Yeah.
Surreal. It's surreal.
It's this depressing kind of whitewashing our features and trying to make us more acceptable in whatever the standard of beauty in quotes is at the time. And it's usually white features, but
it's very European.
It's depressing because it is a rite of passage for a lot of families that can afford it. It's or they save up to do that one thing, whether it's a nose job or whatever. It's usually a nose job in Middle Eastern Swana communities, unfortunately. Just not unfortunately. I just mean I wish it wasn't the case that we always thought we had to fix in quotes ourselves or look more white or something, if that makes sense.
It's just their obsession with and just because of colonialism, the European sort of aesthetic, Western aesthetic. Yeah. I mean, look, I'm a part of it. I have a text that is always written ready to go that says nose job time, Dad. And so like I have it for the minute I think I need it, that I want that. I'll shoot that text out. Guess what? Dad will make the appointment. Boom. Completely different face. Okay.
That's so, love. That's love.
I'm just waiting.
He's like, he throws in veneers just because.
God, could you imagine next time you see me, my teeth are just like huge.
Well, let's take our second break.
Okay. enough of that.
We'll be right back.
All right, and we're back. Okay, I want to talk to you a little about Rami and how that came about, because you're great in that role. But you, it's interestingly enough, I didn't know that you were, you know, had a Catholic background, because you do play a Muslim man in Rami.
Mm-hmm.
And I think
I do.
You nail
I'm
it.
One.
Yeah, wow, exactly. I think, because I literally was like, he must have been raised in prayer.
Very
like,
convincing.
Yeah.
Very convincing.
I don't know. That's cool. That's great.
I had a lot of Muslim friends in Windsor.
Mm-hmm.
There was a Christian and Muslim, you know, we all would all hang out. So I was around it for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It's very much like a cultural thing at a certain point versus a religious thing in my eyes, like both ways. You know what I mean? It's just like y'all know each other.
Yeah. I learned through the show certain things that I didn't know, like the washing between your feet and all. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like I knew they went to the mosque, but I didn't know what was happening
inside.
So I learned more through the show.
Yeah. And so like, how did that come about? Did you audition for the role or did Rami reach out to you?
Yeah, I was at this restaurant Sage in LA. Is it Sage?
Mm-hmm. Oh, it's Sage in, like, Vegan?
Yeah.
It's like across the street from where I live now. I shouldn't say that. Whatever. No one knows where I live. It's fine. That's right.
Coordinates.
Yeah. Sticky Rice is amazing. But I was there and then I ran into him and one of the other writers, and they had told me they had the show greenlit, the pilot.
Amazing.
And then I told him, I was like, I want to move to New York. He goes, I'll link you with my boy. You can stay there until you find an area you like. So I moved down there and we did the Arab Fest. You know, they do it every year and we're at the stand. He's like, I congratulated him. I was like, dude, the pilot's. He's like, you want to audition? I was like, yeah. And then he tells me the day, and then he reaches out, and I'm in China doing stand-up at the time.
Wow.
Okay.
I was like, I have no reader. And he's like, just make it a monologue. So I get to, where was it, Beijing? And the promoter there, early 20s, nice lady, she's geeked about stand-up. So she gets me to the hotel. She's like, I'll come back and get you if you want to eat. And I was like, yeah. She comes back. And I go, how do I tell her that I need help with a self-tape? I just need someone to record. I don't know what this show's about. So I'm trying to describe to her what a self-tape is, what the show is. And then tell her to come to my room, which is creepy.
Yeah.
So we get there. She's holding my cell phone. I do the first take, I guess. I didn't know there was going to be takes. I go, how was that? And she lowers the phone and she goes, nah, do it again. I was like, oh, shit.
I mean, she got you this role, what I'm hearing.
She did. So I do it again, send it over. And then I'm in Singapore 2 days later and my Canadian agent sends me a text. They're like, you booked the pilot. And I sent her lady, hey, yo, we did it.
Yeah.
Oh, it's so nice. I love that she like can now see you potentially on TV being like, I did that.
I directed his audition.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Then Rami knew. He was let's just get this guy. Like, he's great.
Well, then I think we found out that was December. We shot the pilot. And then I think in April, it went to series.
Mm.
And then I was in Queens at my boys, and then a story actually. Yeah. And then I went in the room and he's like, yo, we got picked up. Ugh. And I go, hey, congratulations. He goes, what do you mean? That's like, congratulations. He goes, no, you're on. Because I didn't know the length of how involved I was. I thought he just, hey man, I'm on. And I was like, oh, congrats.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. It's been family ever since.
That's hilarious. Like, great job, you guys. All right, bye. They're like, no, we need you to play the role you booked.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's also like kind of like a depressing kind of like you'd be like, oh, I did it, and you're like, oh, that's good for you, but like deep down you're like, oh. And then they're like, no, it's you too. I'm imagining it more pathetic. It's not as pathetic as I'm making it sound. That's just how I would react.
You know, he's always been a stand-up dude and a hard worker, even from the beginning. He's like, do you want to audition? I go, of course. But I was like very happy for him.
Yeah, no, of course. That was like a universal happiness when we saw that like Rami Youssef was like doing his thing and everyone was like loving it and everything. I think everyone was just like, yay. There wasn't like a single person that was like, he doesn't deserve that, because he does.
Right.
And to be honest, even auditioning, I was like, oh, I'm not going to get this. I'm not Muslim. Like, I'm not getting it. Which also maybe made me relax. When I got it, I was like, oh, this is wild. So it was beautiful.
That's amazing. Yeah. Just everything about the situation. You're like, finally a family that I know on TV. And then also like... Yeah. When he won his Golden Globe and he said Allahu Akbar, and I was like, thank you.
Yeah.
Terrify all these white people.
Yes. Like, yes. Amazing. That gave his life.
Yeah.
It's so cool that you're on this like very pivotal show that like hearing Arabic and English in a show, like how my family talks and stuff, it's like indescribable, like to me and my sisters, to be like, wow, that's actually us, you know? And it's so beautiful to see. It brings me to tears. So I just think it's really fucking cool that you're a part of that, hopefully a new tradition that keeps going, you know, for a lot of cultures and a lot of languages.
Even doing this scene, I'm like, this is so cool. Like, we get to hear how we speak on TV. I was like, yo, this is like, even Mo saying shaitan.
Yeah.
And it's just like so.
Yeah. And also, like, it creates such humanity for, like, Muslim men on the show, because, like, Rami's struggling for most of it, trying to, you know, figure out his identity and all that. But then, like, your character and then the other friend that runs the diner, like...
Mo.
Yeah, you guys are like, let's go to strip club. It's amazing.
Mo was, I was kind of on the fence.
I know, but your character, that was just like, okay.
Because your character's married, right? Your character's married.
I am.
Your character is like the perfect Arab child. Like,
he's a doctor.
Correct? He's a doctor, married, devout. What more can a Muslim family need?
Yeah.
But also just a human being. So you're like, okay. Yeah. Like, we're going.
Well, I do start gambling.
Oh, yeah.
There's such an idea of how a young Muslim man is supposed to act. And it's like, no, like, you, when you're born and raised in America or like Canada, like, you understand culture. Like, it's not like you're like, I'm so strict. I mean, there are people like that, but also like there are Muslims who live their lives differently. And I like that it just like paints this picture that is like, not everyone's exactly the same. And like, stereotypes are literally stereotypes. Like, we all do our own thing. We all make our religion what we make it, you know? And that's why I like the show. Cause Rami's not like, I don't know. There's so many layers to the show, like from the mom to the dad to the sister experiencing her thing and being like fetishized to like, you know, Rami's whole experience with his, like, just everything that he's up to. And then, you know, like there's the uncle, the problematic uncle who says wild shit. And
everything,
you know,
is so relatable.
Yeah.
It's unsettling.
Yeah.
How relatable it is. Like the Zumba, that's my mom. My mom and Zumba best friends, like that dancing class that his mom does. The uncle thing, relatable to, I think, every family.
Yeah.
That comes from the Middle East. I appreciate that it's able to tackle like heavy things like 9/11, like how an Arab boy must have felt and all this stuff. But at the same time, it's just like, hey, this is an Arab family just living as an Arab family. It's not really dramatic. It's not like about the fucking CIA or some bullshit. It's just like, here's a family that happens to be Arab and this is how they live. So I think that is my favorite thing. Just like, we're just a family that happens to be a little different than the normal sitcom or whatever people are used to.
Yeah, I agree. I can't wait for season 3.
Yeah.
Same. I can't. You know, I'll tell you guys, I started off the season without a prayer rug. And then now I have a prayer rug 2 years later.
Wow. What, you mean like physically as a like in your apartment right now?
Apartment right now, yeah.
Wow, we're going to convert you. Okay, got it, got it. You're going to come to the Muslim side.
You, yeah, you never know.
Yeah, you can't see, but I have like four on the wall behind me. Yeah. I don't know. After a while, you're like, I mean, my mom is devout Muslim, so I've grown up with prayer rugs, and I just like collect them now. They're just beautiful. Some of them are so beautifully made. You could go to the bazaar really and the, you know, in different countries and like fight with old Middle Eastern men to get a good price. They're all trying to scam you. God, that's where I get my high. It's fighting with old Persian men trying to get a good price on something. My dad and I do good cop, bad cop. Well, I'll come in like, and then my dad will come in like so fucking hot, like, yes, sister! Like fighting. It's fun.
Whatever works. You want that deal. They only respect you if you haggle. It's really true. When I was a freshman going to college, like the one care package my mom sent me off with was this shoebox, like a big shoebox. And inside was a prayer rug, a Quran, all this other stuff. And
perfect. I'll use all of these.
Yeah. Wait, did your mom, when you first started driving, did she put like a...
You think, yes, I have a Quran hanging at my, yeah, on my... Yes, I do. I have a miniature Quran. It's still there. It hangs off
rearview
mirror. Yes. What, do you think I'm allowed to drive a car without that? Okay.
No.
My mom gave me a little like prayer, like alhamdulillah, like little, what, do you know how they have the little framed ones?
Yeah,
like I have one on my side table because of my mom's course. Like, you have to put this on your side table.
What's how will you be protected?
Yeah, like, here, thanks. Thank you, mom. Yes, I must. And it's there because I can't, you know, I know she'll, I have a feeling like even if I like faced it down, she'd be like, call me like, what, what's going on with you? I'm like, oh no. But you know what, Dave? Thank you so much for joining us. We really appreciated you taking the time to talk to us.
Yeah.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah. Because we know that comedy was just a long game to go to be an actor. So I hope that we continue to see you on the screen acting and being great because you're a really good actor.
Oh,
you're really fucking
you.
Funny.
Thank you.
Because again, you convinced all of us that you were a devout Muslim man.
Who knew?
But yeah, I just can't wait to continue seeing you doing your thing. I think it's really exciting. And
oh, I appreciate it. So much.
I will be Venmoing you for the photos.
Yeah. So look out for the invoice.
Please do. Please do.
I'm kidding. I'm not going to do that. But thank you again.
Inshallah, you pay Shireen what you owe her.
But no, for real, it's been a pleasure. Thank you for doing this. And for people that somehow don't know, where can they find you on the internet if you would like to be found?
I'd like to be found at Dave Merhej, MERHEJ, on Instagram.
Great. Perfect.
On the gram.
Perfect.
Okay. This is Ethnically Ambiguous. It's Ethnically AMB, AMB on Twitter and AMBIG on Instagram. I'm Shireen. It's Shirohiro on Instagram and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Husnie on Twitter. And you know what? Go watch Rami. It's on Hulu. Season 1 and 2 already out. You can binge it. You can watch it all in one sitting. Oh my God.
Really can. Wow.
Just like I do every time the season drops. I'm like, it's Rami day. Ooh. And then I sit and I don't move for 24
and
hours.
And live text my sisters about it.
Yeah. Yeah. I usually text you. And I'm like.
Oh yeah. Thank you, Dave. And go
Thank
watch
you guys.
And Dave on Rami and also all the specials and all that stuff. Because you won, we didn't even get into this, but you won the Juno Award for Comedy Album of the Year in 2019. So y'all, he has to be good. So go support, watch. Okay, bye.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.